This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
Josephus was an ancient historian who is referenced many times on this program because of the volume of work that he left behind that adds a greater dimension of our understanding of the biblical world, especially the first century time of Jesus. There's a book out, The Complete Works of Josephus, translated by William Whiston with a commentary by Paul Meyer by Craigle Publications. And Professor Meyer is our guest on today's program. He's a professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University. Josephus has so much information in his writings. I guess in a way it would be comparable to the Dead Sea Scrolls in the way that it illuminates our understanding of that time. Would that be a fair comparison?
Well, in terms of total impact on everything we know about the biblical world, far more than the Dead Sea Scrolls. There's no question about that. I'm not trying to say the Dead Sea Scrolls aren't important. They are, of course. But what I'm trying to say is that if Josephus had not written, every one of our biblical commentaries today would probably shrink to half their size. I mean, that's how important he is.
And there has always been some question on whether or not Josephus was accurate in what he wrote. And it seems to me the thinking on that has changed in recent years, and he's gained a little more respect.
Yes, I think Josephus was overcome with this problem of, did he sell out his nation? Many Jews claim he was a Judas Iscariot who sold out his people and so on, which is absolutely incorrect. Josephus himself was a survivor who was captured by the Romans. He did not willingly go into the Roman side by any means in the Jewish war. Later, he was used as a translator between the Roman and Jewish sides, tried to keep the peace, tried to keep that war from ever breaking out. But then when he was forced into it, he was very patriotic in terms of defending Galilee. But when he was captured, obviously, he's going to try to stay alive and do what he can. So I really think he's gotten a bum rap in that regard. As far as his accuracy is concerned, Josephus does share the problem with many ancient historians of overstatement at times, hyperbole. Occasionally, he'll be wrong in his data, but not excessively so. Archaeology has proven Josephus right again and again in terms of the hard evidence that we can find in the soil over there. So I think in the last century or so, his reputation has been enhanced rather than detracted from.
He was born in AD 37. He grew up in a Jewish family. His background probably not unlike the Apostle Paul with the kind of training and instruction that he had.
Rather similar, I'd say. They both had a desert experience as well. That's right. If you want to be a seer or a prophet in the Near East, you always have to hit the desert at some point in your life. You know, that happened even to Jesus. In Josephus' case, when he was a teenager, he studied for 2 years out in the desert with a hermit named Bannus, who was inclined toward the Pharisees, and Josephus himself became a Pharisee later when he came back.
Well, he gives us insight into the parties of Judaism in those days, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and he's really the one who mentions the Essenes and gives us a lot of information on that. And apparently he wanted to check each of those groups out.
He wanted to kind of survey the intellectual waterfront. He tried them each. He actually gives us more detail on the Essenes than the other two.
But for some reason, I guess maybe that was a little bit too much of an ascetic life.
Well, we think this is the Dead Sea Scrolls community, of course, and we can see why they were off by themselves in the Judean desert in terms of their manual of discipline.
He was captured by the Romans as he was trying to defend a Galilean city called Yodfat. We have talked with some of the archaeologists who have been excavating there. In fact, we were able to visit the site at one point. This is a site not unlike Masada or Gamla in terms of its history and the Jewish-Roman conflict.
That's right. The archaeology there is rather new. I was delighted when the report came out about what they had done at Yodfat. It was just an exciting chapter in Josephus's history when he talks about the Roman emperor-to-be. Right now he was just a general, Vespasian, attacking Jotapata, it was called, of course, in New Testament times. With a battering ram, and how Josephus very cleverly was able to load gunny sacks with chaff and dangle them down to intercept the head of the battering ram so it would bounce off harmlessly. And when the Romans got too close to the city wall, he poured boiling oil down their backs and this kind of thing.
And how did he survive?
Well, when the Romans finally broke through, Josephus and 52 others were hiding in a cave that opened onto the wall of a cistern, of all things. So it was a great hiding place. But somebody blew their cover, and then Josephus suggested it was time to surrender because the Romans knew that they were there. They're looking for Josephus, of course, with blood in their eye. They had kind of a Masada complex at that point. The Jewish rebels said, no, we're not going to fall into Roman hands. We'll sooner commit suicide. And Josephus tried to lecture them on why suicide was wrong, but they held a sword to his throat, so he quickly understood their point and instead suggested a mass suicide in which B would kill A, C would kill B, D would kill C, and so forth, and then the last one would commit suicide. They all agreed to that. And then, unbelievably, Josephus has the gall to tell us, after all this mayhem, whether by fate or the will of God, Josephus and one other were left. I don't think Josephus is tampering with the truth here. I think he is a survivor, and guess who was holding the straws? I think it's quite clear that he had carved himself as one of the last. And at that point, the two looked at each other and surrendered to Rome anyway.
And for some reason, he wasn't killed. Apparently, he was of value to the Romans.
They wanted to kill him at first. They brought him before Vespasian. And Josephus then immediately pipes up and said, that's fine, sure, you can kill me, but remember, Flavius Vespasian, you heard it here first. You and your son Titus here will both become emperors in a short time. At that point, they decided to put Josephus in prison instead. Then when, by rarest coincidence, that happened anyway, they suddenly regarded Josephus as a prophet, and they pulled him out of prison and then gave him a place of honor. Now, I don't think Josephus was a true prophet in that respect. I think it was just a wonderful, lucky guess. He was an opportunist, of course. And can you really blame him? He's trying to stay alive.
Our guest on today's program is Paul Meyer, professor at Western Michigan University, and we're talking about Josephus in depth on today's program because we reference him so many times as we talk about archaeology on the Book and the Spade. Many times we call him Josephus Flavius or Flavius Josephus. That's the name of Titus and Vespasian's families.
Indeed, they welcomed him into the family later. They subsidized his literary endeavors. Vespasian gave him his old mansion on the Quirinal Hill to live in and do his writing.
And the writing that he did then is rather voluminous, the Antiquities of the Jews and also the Wars of the Jews. Was he trying to explain the Jews to the Romans?
Yes, that's certainly the case, Gordon. What happened originally was that he first did his battle diary. The Romans wanted to see what happened in that terrible war with the Jews, and so Josephus gives them 7 books in this massive undertaking called the Jewish War. This then created a new readership in Rome and a lot of interest in who these Jews were, and there were other questions raised about, well, who are they? How could they hold out against us Romans so long and so on? So after that, Josephus wrote his famous prequel, I think the word is now, which is much longer, which was a whole history of the Jewish people from creation all the way to the beginning of the Jewish War in AD 62. And that, of course, is called the Jewish Antiquities, which he wrote in 20 books.
And the question a lot of people have is, what did Josephus say about Jesus?
Well, he mentions Jesus in 2 very famous episodes in the 18th book of his Antiquities. The first reference is in the middle of the administration of Pontius Pilate. Chronologically, it's perfect, but unfortunately, the passage is just too Christian for words. And we know that Josephus never converted to Christianity. So for that reason, scholars for the last 200 or 300 years have talked about an interpolation at that passage. And some have tried to say that it's totally false. But the balance of critical scholarship today is that Josephus certainly did mention Jesus at that passage, but certainly not in such glowing terms that claims that he was more than a man, that he was the Messiah who rose from the dead. Obviously, those are statements that only a Christian could make. And then in Antiquities Book 20, he does mention Jesus again in connection with the stoning to death of his half-brother, James the Just of Jerusalem. This Antiquities Book 20, Section 200, has never been seriously questioned by scholars. When Josephus says, then James, the brother of Jesus, who was called the Christ, and he goes on to describe what happened to James. Interestingly, by the way, adding to our knowledge of the first bishop of the Christian church in Jerusalem, you know, Acts 15 tells us that James was in charge of the apostolic council. The Bible doesn't tell us what happened to James, but Josephus does. So it's a very valuable passage. Now, back to Antiquities 18, in this long paragraph on Jesus. The thrilling news is that in the 70s, Professor Shlomo Pines of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem discovered a manuscript tradition of Josephus that is not interpolated at that passage, and it reads more soberly and, in fact, is most probably what Josephus actually wrote.
Out of all of the things that we've mentioned and everything else, why do you like Josephus?
Well, I think I've liked him ever since I never even knew about him back in Sunday school days when I was always so tuned in and turned on by these biblical episodes that I always wanted to know more. And I asked my Sunday school teacher questions that made her head spin, not intentionally to embarrass her, but I always wanted to know more and more detail. Don't we have anything more? And it wasn't until I discovered Josephus that I said, hey, wait a minute, here we do have more data on some of the very important biblical personalities. Pontius Pilate, we have fascinating additional detail on the judge of Jesus on Good Friday. Could Herod have killed those babies in Bethlehem in connection with the Christmas story? Well, Josephus gives us 1,000 times as much additional data on Herod the Great as we get in Matthew's Gospel. We get further detail on Joseph Caiaphas and Annas and the high priests. John the Baptist, 2 fresh paragraphs on John, which tell us where he was executed, by the way. The New Testament doesn't tell us that, but Josephus does. It took place at Herod's fortress palace called Machaerus, which was catacorner across the Dead Sea from Masada. Who was the dancing daughter of Herodias who got John decapitated? Everybody knows it was Salome, or Salome. But I challenge you to find her name in the New Testament. It's not there. How do we know her name was Salome? Thank you, Josephus. He mentions that. So this is a kind of fresh data, which has always intrigued me.
And it's all compiled in an edition of the Complete Works of Josephus, translated by William Whiston, commentary by our guest, Paul Meyer, a professor at Western Michigan University. Professor Meyer, thank you for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Gordon.
The preceding interview was recorded in the year 2000, when the book mentioned had just been released. Professor Meyer retired from Western Michigan University in 2011 at the age of 81 and became Professor Emeritus. He's authored 16 published books, historical books and also historical fiction. They include Josephus, The Essential Works, a translation and abridgment of the writings of Josephus. Keeping up with all the developments and discoveries in biblical archaeology is challenging, but made easier with a subscription to Artifacts, our quarterly biblical archaeology news magazine. You can find out how to subscribe at our website at radioscribe.com. There you'll also find breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority, as well as information on our 2024 Israel Study Tour. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.